Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read, but sometimes not a book. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello.
And last year we went to see a movie and we got back and we thought, lots of people are talking about this. It's a big movie. It was called Interstellar, directed by, is it Christopher Nolan? No, one of the Nolans.
I never remember.
Okay.
Directors. And
someone stuff. Nolan. I think, was it Christopher? Written by Christopher, and then, I've forgotten the names already. This is not a good start to the podcast. Anyway, let's get on with this. So this time we went to see, this evening we went to see The Martian, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Matt Damon.
Mars.
And starring Mars as well, and NASA, and things like that. So we're going to talk about it, not because we normally talk, we're not going to review every single science fiction that we saw, but this was a book that we did read, and Juliana just said, hey, you should bring up the episode list so you can say when we reviewed it. And of course, I forgot to do that. Let me type in The Martian.
So
The Martian, yeah. Episode 212, which was at the beginning. We listened to it over New Year's, didn't we? From 2003 to 2004.
Listened to it as an audiobook.
We listened to it as an audiobook, and we listened to it together as we were driving across Germany and back. And it was really good. It was really good fun way. It was lots of good puzzles. So if you actually want to listen to the review of the book, this is not the review of the book. This is us talking about a movie that we just saw. So if you downloaded episode 286 by accident, go back to 212 where we actually talk about the book. This time we are just talking about the movie and maybe a little bit about the book, but otherwise that's it. So let's do it. Let's say, did you enjoy this movie and would you recommend it? Other people watch it.
Yes, I actually really enjoyed it, and I was quite surprised how we were wondering, after we listened to the audiobook, how would you do it? How would you make a movie where it's one person just talking or thinking and doing stuff would seem to be quite boring?
Well, I think when she said it'd have to be a video diary.
Yeah,
didn't we?
And that's stuff like that. Yeah. But I think they managed to combine so many different kind of ways how you can see somebody talking, thinking, doing, that it was really good. There wasn't, how long was it you said?
I don't know. I mean, we got the IMDb page right here, so I guess I can just look at it.
So I don't think there was any moment where I thought, this is going a bit long.
Really?
No, there wasn't.
Okay.
For me, not.
Okay.
Was it for you?
No, but I mean, I did 144 minutes, so that's pretty long. That's 2 hours and 10 minutes. So take off the credits, forget about the credits and some other bits and pieces. So yeah, we're talking a big chunk of time. Yeah, 2 hours 20 minutes. I don't know how long the credits are, but it's a big. Oh, you're yawning already. It is quite late. It's already past 11 at night. So we did literally just get back from the cinema. I never thought I'm bored, but I did think, hey, this is quite long. You know, when they got to that part and they're like, and they come in and they start going, how do we do the orbital mechanics to get them back, to swing back around to Mars and stuff. At that point, I was like, wow, this is actually not a long way. We've still got quite a lot of story and action still to go. And I felt the length of it, but I wasn't bored. It wasn't like I wasn't enjoying it, but, I think it's interesting, with this one, when we watched Interstellar last year, I'd avoided all spoilers. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what the story was going to be. I'd seen one or two, a little clip of the wormhole going through. So I kind of had a new kind of what the styling was going to be, but I had no idea anything at all, except I'd heard it was involved going through a wormhole and a black hole. People saying, oh, there's NASA or some NASA scientists worked out the physics and what it would look like. And they did that. And I was like, so there's a wormhole and there's a black hole. That's pretty much all I knew about it and some of the cast. So as it was going through, I had no idea what the pacing was going to be like or how much was still to go or how much of this. And here, we read the book and I know everything that's going to happen. I know what all the characters are. I know which characters are going to survive. I know which characters are going to die. None. As we go through, I knew what, I knew how much was going and with the pacing. So there's nothing wrong with the pacing. It was just that was always nagging at the back of my mind going, wow, they're spending a lot of time on this thing and no time on that thing, So
yeah, I actually had the same feeling that sometimes I would think, it would be nice if I wouldn't know how the end is and how it works at the end and how he gets through and if he gets through.
Well, let's set it up. Like, I mean, we've reviewed the book. We're guessing people have maybe seen the movie. If you've not seen the movie, we're not going to do any massive spoilers straight away. But it is about someone, like, the book opens with him going, I'm fucked. We were on Mars with a third mission to Mars out of five missions. And these guys, they went, there was a storm, and they went back to the, was it the Mars lift?
MAV.
MAV, the Mars Ascension vehicle, whatever it is. The vehicle that they've already landed there to get off of Mars again. And they're like, right, let's get that up back into space. And on the way there, an antenna blows off one of the landers or something. And the antenna hits Mark Watney, who's one of the six astronauts there on Mars, and it goes through his it punctures his like life support monitor.
Yes.
So it looks like he's dead because they're not getting any signal from the life support, and it punctures his suit and he gets knocked out and covered in sand. And the other people fly off into space. This is, again, no spoilers. This is how the movie opens. It's how the book opens.
True.
And so it's like, great. He has to now live on Mars for however many days and trying to work out how he's going to survive and how to get back in contact with Earth, or is Earth going to contact him again? And yeah,
it's, maybe even get back.
Yeah, and how will he get back? How will he get off of Mars? Is there a way to do this? And he uses all of his tools and all of his science to get back there. So that's the setup. And yeah, it's like a man stuck on Mars for many days, and then NASA going, oh shit, we've got a man, like, a man has died on Mars, and then like, oh shit, a man it hasn't died on Mars, which is almost kind of worse because they've got to do other things. So so that was it. So again, in a way, like, we could say, oh, it was like the book in this way and not like the book in that way, but just as a movie, just talking about it in the movie, I thought it was very good. Very good movie.
Yeah, I think so too.
Not the best movie I've seen this year, but a pretty good science fiction movie. A good kind of disaster, man stuck in a...
Yeah.
It's like a Castaway kind of movie, like, oh, I've got to survive, or, you know.
Yeah, and I think in the book, I know we haven't read it, and I did understand from other people who actually read the book that it was actually sometimes quite difficult to get through all the reading through the, like, science... If you have like the formulas and the whatever oxygen and times whatever you do the measurements, and you have to read all through that, can be somehow tiring.
Yeah, it's like reading a textbook.
Yeah, but we were listening to the audiobook, and it's kind of easier to just get it read to you and to understand it. But I think they did quite a good job in transitioning that into a movie, not being too heavy on mathematical or physical, like, how do you call it?
Well, yeah, like all the measurements. Like in the book, it was literally, I have 13 kilograms of this, and I have one liter of this thing, and if I mix that 1 liter of this thing with 1 kilogram, and in the movie, it was only about how many days, or Martian days, as they call them, sols, how many sols have they got, and how much food has he got to last there, and when can they get a spaceship to go and pick him up or to drop off more stuff, and that was it. That was it. That was the only numbers that there was ever there. So he wrote things down. It's sort of like, I have 50 potatoes. I have this many bits of food. And those were the only numbers ever, except right at the very end where they had some little, speed of like how fast people were going towards each other in space.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it was only ever like how many days, how many sols, like how, like, does he have enough food and can we get there before he runs out of food and things. And that was it. And I thought that was actually pretty genius that they always kept bringing it back to a number of days. And every time we skipped forward in time, it would come up like, sol 38 or 38 sols, and then it would go like 2 months later. It was always just passing of time, and that was the main focus of all, even though there was loads of other technical stuff going on, it was happening without, specifically, no numbers were involved.
Yes.
It was always like, I will do this and I do this. It's like, I'm going to do all this chemistry and I'm going to name all these chemistry things, but I'm not going to say any numbers at all. The only numbers we ever want is how many days have passed and how many days has it got to go until we run out of food.
And so they make kind of like a movie that can be like, it understand in popular culture.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to be a science nerd or even a science attracted person like me.
No.
I'm not very science like understanding. I mean, I like the book. I didn't get all the things, but in the movie, it's really soft. soft science, I would say.
Well, no, it's kind of hard science, but it's about the people doing the hard science. Like, you could always tell, oh, okay, this is happening. There were some things that I want to go into in this. What I actually really liked was that most of the scientists were just people doing stuff. Like, you actually go, like, when they came in and said, here's this scientist, from this original mission back in the 90s, you know, the Pathfinder mission, like, and here it is, these are the guys. And I was like, do you think they're actually the real guys? I was actually thinking, are they actors playing that? Or did they actually just go, hey, you guys who are working on the Pathfinder mission in the 1990s, just come in and stand here, and the director, the NASA director, or whoever it was, he's going to walk up and say, hey, this. And I was thinking that could have actually been the real guys.
Really?
Because they look just like... And it was always the time when... it came off as a little bit... I thought it was a little bit weird when Donald Glover, as Rich Purnell, a NASA astronomer... he's not an astronomer. He was the astro-navigator, whatever it was called. I can't remember the exact job title that he had, but he was astro-navigation, you know, swinging things and working out orbits and stuff.
Astrodynamics.
And astrodynamicist, that was it, yes.
Something
like that. Astro-navigationist. So he was the only one who I thought he was too much of a caricature. He was like too much of a personality, like, you know, he was like, you know, doing silly things and tipping out. And I thought that was one of the only ones where I thought, why everyone else seemed like kind of normal people. Like, the astronauts felt like normal people. They just felt, you know, they felt like, I know astronauts because we see live streams of them from the ISS and things like that. And they just feel like normal people. Everyone else felt like normal people. And he just felt like he was putting on a comedy show, like a bit too much.
But I quite liked him because he didn't do things just because his boss said, and just because it's not like you.
Yeah.
I do know people who have offices like that and who just give a shit what is the surrounding thinking. They are just so absorbed by what they are doing. And everyone leaves them alone because they know they're doing a good job if you leave them alone.
Yeah, I understand that, but he was the only, like I'm saying, out of everyone in the whole movie, he was the only one who I thought, that casting was a bit weird and that performance was a bit weird. Everyone else just felt like genuine technicians and genuine scientists and genuine, like, people.
But it's a movie, and so I think his character got a bit of fun into it. Like, when they did the coming back, when he was explaining how they came back, that was funny.
No, that
was great.
It was okay. I'm just saying it felt a little bit... That was the only time it was a bit too far. I don't want to concentrate too much. I'm actually saying this is a good thing. Out of everyone in the movie, there was only one person who I thought was a bit miscast or who was overplaying their part.
Didn't have that impression at all.
I'm just saying, so you thought everyone was perfect?
No, I'm just saying that I don't think that he was miscast, or how you say it.
But I'm saying this is a positive thing. Only one miscasting in the whole movie.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying I don't think so.
Okay, well, that's cool.
Well, people out there, just go and have a look yourself. And
watch the movie.
Watch the movie.
I'm just saying, it was all good. So there's some other people that I want to, just some other cast members who are bringing up here as well. I thought Jeff Daniels, as the head of NASA, NASA director, I thought he was pretty good. Some of the other astronauts were good. Sean Bean, I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. It's just some Yorkshire guy or wherever he's from. It's like everybody else was putting on American accents to be NASA people, even though a lot of them were British and other people from other places. Yeah. And he was like, no, I'm just going to be from Yorkshire and I'm going to be a mission director at NASA, but from Yorkshire. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it was fun to make it a bit more international that way.
Did it mention where he come from?
Maybe not in the book, but it's like he just turned up and he just did the first scene and like he finished his first day of shooting, was like, oh shit, I did all of that in a Yorkshire accent rather than an American accent. And they're like, just leave it. And I really liked when they come together and they're like, what is this? What's Project Elrond? And he's like, oh, it's a Lord of the Rings reference and at the Council of Elrond. Yeah. And he was in there in the movie.
Yeah.
That was him.
Actually really funny.
Not Aragorn. He was forgot. Anyway,
I don't know,
can't remember
movies.
His name now. So he was in that thing, and I thought that was a little fun thing because that's actually in the book. This is Project Elrond because it's the secret council and stuff. And so I'm thinking maybe he was just cast because he was actually in the movie, and they were like, oh, let's get him in, and then he doesn't die. that's not a spoiler, but he's got a reputation of always dying before the end of every movie and every TV show. Oh yeah, like Sean does, like there's even probably websites called Does Sean Die at the End? Does Sean Bean Die at the End? I'm sure, like .com, whatever.
Maybe he does die. We don't want to spoil things.
So you said before, we're like, oh man, there was a German astronaut, a guy called Axel Henny, played Axel Vogel. And in the movie, you were like, oh, his accent was so bad.
Not I.
No.
The whole cinema.
Living in Germany, we go to a German cinema in Germany, and we watch the movie in the original language. But then, when he was like, mein Gott, and everyone's like,
oh.
However, after listening to the audiobook, his German accent was amazing compared to the German accent in the audience, because he only when he said German things did he sound German. The rest of the time he just sounded like kind of vaguely Europeanish, not an American accent, but someone who just speaks a lot with English people.
How many words did he say in total? Not a lot.
Not a lot, but I thought he actually did really well. I mean, I thought all of those guys did really well.
Yeah.
I really liked Michael Pena as Rick Martinez, the astronaut. He's like the hotshot pilot. Who is?
I thought that Chris Beck was a bit weak.
Chris Beck, who
like
was Chris
Sebastian
Beck?
Stan, he was a bit blank.
He was just like the typical American male astronaut, and he just fell through the cracks because there was all of these other cast members. There's people from India, or you were saying Chiwetel Ejiofor. He's a British actor, and you were like, in the book, isn't he? Vincent Kapoor. He's Indian or something.
The name to me sounds very much like a person from India.
But in the movie, he does say, oh, my father was a Hindu, my mother was a Baptist, I believe in lots of gods or something like that.
No.
That's what he said?
Yeah, but I don't think, like, he's not coming across as anyone from India. I mean, maybe he is. I couldn't believe that. Anyway.
It's pretty good.
But the Alex Vogel... The German
astronaut.
The actor is where from? From Norway?
He's a Norwegian accent actor.
I really think. Why don't they there are loads of German actors out there played in American movies. Just take one.
Let me ask you this. How good was the Chinese accents when the Chinese people were speaking Chinese? How good were their accents?
To my ears, alright.
Exactly. And to everybody else's ears, except people who live in Germany or are German, the German accent was perfectly alright. That's why they cast him, because it's just...
Yeah, but the Chinese people actually were Chinese people.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yes.
Eddie Koh is a Chinese... Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I'm just saying that those Chinese actors could have been doing really, really, really bad Chinese...
Look, Shen Shu is a Chinese singer and actress.
Yep, I understand that. Anyway, so I thought it was really good that it was a big international cast with lots of people.
Yes.
There was Indian people, there was Mexican people, there was, so Hong Kong.
Eddie Koh Hung
is
from Hong Kong.
Yeah, so those are the Chinese people from the Chinese space agency, the Chinese NASA is what they were. So I thought it was good. So let's talk about what I liked about the movie. Oh, no, carry on.
Let me... So I was looking on Goodreads. Looking on Goodreads about what other people said, and I came across to what Jenny from the Reading Envy podcast said.
Yeah.
And she says it is for people... the book is like MacGyver in space.
MacGyver in space, yeah.
And it's always funny when it comes to movies like that. And I always say, this is like MacGyver. And Luke says, what?
I've never seen MacGyver. MacGyver just never crossed my radar.
MacGyver is actually a really big thing. It was in Germany. People know it like when they were in the 90s in a certain age and couldn't access it.
The way that I would describe this movie, and I saw someone else do a similar description, but it starts off and it's like Castaway in space, you know, the Tom Hanks movie. And he's like, I've got to do this and I've got to find a thing to do that. So it's Castaway at the start.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, and there's an SKCD comic about this where they say, hey, the Martian is being made into a movie, and someone says, "What's that?" And says, "Remember the bit in Apollo 13 where they tell the guys down on Earth, they say, take this and all this. Of this stuff, they've got that, and you've got to fix that, and that you put that square peg into that round hole, and you've got 12 hours to do it in, otherwise the people in space die." And they're like, "Great, we'll do it." And it's like a book, which is all of that, and I can't wait for the movie. So all of that middle part of the book, I thought was really, really well, the middle part of the movie, I thought was really well done. Once Mark Watney gets in contact with NASA again, that I thought was actually shown better than the book could ever show it, because they get the Pathfinder, spoilers here, but they get the Pathfinder probe, a replica, and they set it up on in a warehouse in Earth, and it was mirroring what Mark Watney is doing with it, on showing with it and stuff like that.
I really enjoyed that
in space, and it was just so good that they were like typing something there, and then they were getting it thing, and the spaceship, we were actually watching the replica spaceship back on Earth doing the same kind of thing, and I thought that was really effective. And it was, they did a few other things like that, but I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, this was also, I think in this movie was sometimes really strong. Not all the time, but there was some really fun, like visual comedy, and because you
science
mentioned that
comedy,
science, like it was just that wasn't any talking or saying, but it was just something in action showing, and it just becomes really good fun and really funny to see what happens if. If they do it, then he does it, and then he obviously has the same reaction and the same action happening.
Yeah, and then the end of the movie, gravity, but kind of like a different kind of gravity. So what I actually, I thought that was kind of the weakest part from a scientific point of view, because all the rest of the time you're like, oh, okay, sure, the storm, they've even said that the storm at the start wouldn't actually be that powerful on Mars, but hey, we've got to start, we've got to kick the story off somehow, so let's do this. But then it got to the end and he's like, oh, okay, and they said, you're going to be the fastest man in the history of space traveling. It's like, oh, that's pretty good. But that doesn't make sense, because when he's always trying to speed up to reach the spacecraft.
Yeah.
And when he reaches at them, he's going at the same speed as them. So he isn't the fastest. Everyone on the ship is then the fastest person in the history of spaceflight. And I was like, he went up and matched speeds with each other. They slowed down to match speed with him. So they were going faster than him. So how was he going the fastest? How was
he the fastest
person in the history of space?
He was fastest because he had to get away from Mars and through the atmosphere.
Yeah, but you're actually going really slow through the atmosphere. You actually have to then speed up to get up into space. He couldn't have been the fastest person, because when he reached the spaceship, they had slowed down to catch him.
Yeah, but they were in different orbits.
Yeah.
Because.
But the whole point is that he never slowed down. They slowed down to catch him. So anyway, again, this is one of the things that just for me is, as someone who kind of knows about like how orbital mechanics works and things like that, it's for the people watching at home, most 99.9% of the people watching wouldn't have picked up on that. But as soon as that was like, I was like, that doesn't make sense, because he's trying to go as fast as the other people who are swinging around, and they slow down to catch him. So they've already gone faster than he has been when he takes off. So he could have been one of the six fastest people who ever goes into space, but it wasn't really made clear. Mm. And then when they actually go and catch him and they go, oh, this. Don't scratch it. And they go, they try to catch him, and they go to catch him, and they do this thing where they wrap around, and it looked great. But again, it in the same way in Gravity, mild spoilers, the way that George Clooney dies, it's just like he didn't need to die because he was just there. And it's like, it's always that thing where people are grabbing at each other in space is never done well. Like, and that wasn't done well. Every time I've seen it, it's one of the worst moments in one of those other Mars movies, whether it's like Mission to Mars or one of the other ones that came out. There was like two movies that came out around about the same time in the late 90s. Mission to Mars or other thing.
Blank face on my side. I don't know.
Oh, no, it was mentioned here on the Wikipedia page. It was one of those things that... What does it say here? Filming. Mission to Mars and Red Planet both came out in 2000. And in one of those things, it's like someone's drifting away and they're grabbing hold, and it's like, no, don't. And it's like, I'm going to take off the faceplate of my thing, because if you come and try and catch me, we'll both die. But if I kill myself now, we won't both die, and you'll just save yourself. And I'm just like, but it doesn't matter, because he's so close. It's like, that doesn't work in that way. And the way that Mark Watney, he punctured the thing in his hand, and the way he was flying, putting his hand out, that wouldn't be the way that you'd do it. And I was
thinking the whole time, if it would work like that, he would just go in circles because yes. he only has it on one hand.
Yeah. And he was the way he was doing it. It's like yeah. he's not balancing himself. What he should yeah. have done, if they wanted to do this, he should have curled up into a ball yeah. and put his hand out in exactly the opposite way round, and he should have been putting his head in one way. I'm trying to actually do this now. Put his head in one way and put his hand in exactly the opposite way from his... So, and I would have thought, like, you've... All the way up until this point, yeah. they'd done everything to me, and I was just going, I don't know the exact details, but everything else felt really genuine until they got into space and did the gravity part.
Yeah.
And it just didn't land for me, that whole thing. You know?
Well, it wasn't catching on that kind of stuff for me, but what I was thinking the whole time, you know, when he was in this capsule
yeah.
and there was nothing around him, no
air.
Stuff. There were these there was this debris flying around, like the screws and stuff.
It was like orbiting him. First of all,
where did that come and why is it just then suddenly so slow? Because he was going quite quickly. Then yeah, this would be quick as well, right?
And well, the thing is, they would either go in a straight line,
yeah,
and they would have hit the wall and bounced, yeah. or they would have gone out the hole,
exactly,
or they would have hit him.
Yeah.
But nothing was hitting him.
So it was like kind of like out. It was kind of floating around him and hitting the faceplate with like a little donk.
But yeah, donk, so everything donk. Was just going like around in circles with him. Yeah. And I was like, it looks cool. And all yeah, of the stuff at the good. End looked great. But everything pretty much from the moment he took off until the moment they saved him, none of that scientific, like, looked great. It was tense. I was okay, but a lot of that tension just didn't work for me. Like, all the rest of the stuff when he was farming and he was traveling and driving yeah. and all that kind of stuff, that worked for me because it felt real. Even yeah. though the gravity on Mars was suspiciously similar to the gravity on Earth, I was willing to overlook that. Yeah. But when they're like, okay, now the dramatic moment of this is based on orbital mechanics and delta V, and we're going at this and we're going to close at 50 meters a second. It could have just been, they could have just said, oh, 50 meters a second, that's like hitting a car at, I think they said that, it's like being hit by a train or like jumping onto a train at 20
jumping
miles.
On yeah. a train, yeah.
If they'd have like done that a bit more, but it would have been great that if they'd have actually shown him coming at that speed, like really, really small in the distance. And then as he came, they had to do like a slingshot, like to whip themselves into the right speed yeah. or something, and they could have wrapped around. There was just other ways to do it, but the only way that they ever show this kind of stuff on space on these space movies, it's really difficult to show someone closing at 42 meters a second because it's so quick that you'd only ever see them for like 2 seconds. They'd yeah. be too small to see, and then they'd be there, and then they'd be gone again. It's the yeah. same in gravity when the debris comes round. Like yeah. the speed that they would have actually been going round is like faster than a speeding bullet, which is too fast to see unless it's like big, you know. It's
of
like
course.
It, like when you
but
see
if
the jet,
you wanted to make a movie
over.
You kind of have to show the action.
But I thought they could have done a way of closing at 10 meters a second, which is pretty quick, you know. 10 meters a second is pretty quick. I think they could have shown that in a way which was dramatic, in which was like, okay, we've got one shot at this, and they're coming, and they go, and they're trying to, like, he's trying to slow down in one way, and they're trying to do it, and there could have been a bit of dramatic, but in the end it was like, oh, we get tangled up. And as soon as he got caught hold of that for the first time, he would have either caught it and been safe or not. But then they did this whole flying around in circles and getting tangled, which looked great, but he was already safe by then.
Yeah, but
You have to
just have in your head that this is a movie made for.
I know, and then it's only when
audience.
They grasp hands, it's like you were going at the same speed of each other. You were fine. Like as soon as you're going at the same speed of each other, and you have any maneuverability, you're fine. And at that point, they were going at the same speed of each other. And what he should have been doing was going in the up, like he was blasting his hand in the wrong way. He was actually trying to get to there faster. And what he should have been doing is trying to speed himself up. He should have been shooting in the same, like in the opposite direction you should have been in to get. Anyway, it was a weird thing.
You're really nerdy. You know that?
No, but the point is, in the book, this was all very clear and it was all good. And everything in the film up until that point, I've been like, I'm really nerdy, but this is pushing all my right nerd buttons. And then we got to the end, I was like, this is pushing the wrong. These are pushing the buttons back out again. Anyway, so let's talk about some other things. What did you like? What things that you liked about the movie? You got some movie things.
Well, I already said all the things I liked about the movie.
Really? Okay.
Now I want to ask you a question.
What's that?
Would you survive on Mars?
No, I would die so quickly because he was a botanist. Although I think it was a bit weird that he held up his thing. He held up his thing
that
and it
was
said botanist. But the point is, he wasn't just a botanist. He was like botanist and engineer and other things, because everyone had to have like
three things.
Two main specialities plus another plus speciality.
Another thing to take over by from another person.
And he was a botanist there, but they didn't take anything with them to grow. And the only, because he realized, oh, potatoes are the only thing there to grow. So what was a botanist doing there? I think that was his like secondary thing. So I would rather have held it up and said, I'm a botanist, but it didn't just say botanist. If on that bit of paper, if it all said botanist / technician or engineer / botanist, I think that would have made a lot more of the rest of it more compelling.
But actually he was there as the botanist because his main feature was to go out and look for soil for traces out on Mars to find any bacteria or any living things. So that I think it was his main job. And then he also had been trained in other areas.
Yeah, like a dual PhD or something like that. But I'm saying in the book it was a bit more specific. It was a bit more blatant that he also had different
that wasn't mentioned at all, I think.
One thing I thought was interesting was how they got around lots of swearing. In the 12A or whatever PG whatever, you're allowed like two swear words.
Yes.
Like you're allowed an F word and an S word or something like that. So at one point he did say fuck out loud.
Yeah.
But then a lot of the time he's typing and it's like an F word and they're like what kind of F word is it? Like, what does he mean by that? Another time you saw the camera outside of the little rover.
Yeah.
And you see him inside.
So you see his lips.
But you see his lips moving and he's just going, fuck, what the fucking fuck? Of course you don't see it. It's just like that. So they got around the not swearing bit, because in the book there's a lot of swearing, a lot of different languages, loads of stupid stuff going on.
Yeah.
But he said shit a few times because he was like, yeah, did I do gardening in my own shit? Yes, I did. You know, that kind of thing. What I liked about this movie, it's one of the first like post GoPro movies.
Post GoPro,
like now everybody knows what GoPros are. Like it used to be like a few years ago that if you were going, oh, and now I'm going to do something to camera, and they'd have a camera there. Here they just go, yeah, it's a GoPro, because we have 4K GoPros now. We can actually just shoot. I mean, they had to put the grain over it because otherwise it'd look different than the real cameras and stuff. But it is one of those things where they just go, oh, GoPros, just go. We'll just put GoPros everywhere, and everyone just knows, oh yeah, that's a GoPro. Everyone just knows that what it's.
And of
like
course, you would stick a GoPro to it because they are really small, and just can really take a lot of stuff.
Yeah, GoPro has worked a long time on things to last. Like they can be bashed around, they can get wet, they can probably go in vacuum. I don't know actually, but you know, it's one of those.
I must admit, when you mentioned GoPro camera for the first time, and you got yourself one in 2012, before the Africa trip.
Yeah, we went to Africa.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. And now they're everywhere.
Yeah,
of course.
And
GoPro's really clever.
And they get, like, compared to the one that you got, and now they are a bit more...
Oh, like, mine's rubbish compared to the latest.
So...
I almost want to get a new one because, like, you know, my one is... Like, when I
it's still good enough.
Yeah, but when I mix the footage with other stuff, you can really tell, oh, that's the weak link.
GoPro, yeah.
That's the weak link there. So also, there was two other moments where there was massive product placement. One of them... The NASA using Cisco systems to do their video conferencing. I'm like, okay, that's fair enough. The other one was so awful.
Just ask me if I spotted. Did I spot it?
Did you spot the other massive, like so blatantly punch you in the face product placement? And I'm going to tell you what it is. What happened before the movie came on? What happened before the movie? They showed an advert, a watch advert. Yeah. What was the company? I can't even remember what
Hamilton.
It was. Yeah, Hamilton Watch. Okay. So we're waiting there to watch the movie. What's the movie called? It's called The Martian. And so the Hamilton Watch decides to have a strike a product placement partnership with there. And so the advert for Hamilton Watches comes up using footage from the movie. So we blatantly watched like a mini trailer for The Martian.
Just before
as we're going to do it. So it's like, hey, here's this movie coming up. Here are the most dramatic scenes from we did actually watch the trailer for The Martian, but like 6 months ago when the first trailer came out.
You didn't
ever see it?
No.
So it was all fresh to you.
And I didn't see the Hamilton advert.
Because
we both
closed our eyes. But it was one of those things. And then it said, The Martian coming to cinemas soon. And I'm like, yes, this screen right now, like in 2 minutes time after, or 3 minutes time after the trailers, and it was so annoying. Like, how can they show footage from the movie we're about to watch right there in the movie?
But did you realize actually then the product placement in the movie?
Yeah.
Did you realize it?
And did
I
see it?
Yeah. And I was thinking at that moment, I was thinking, why the hell is he looking on a analog watch?
This is the craziest thing. Now, I don't want to like get too nerdy about this. I'm going to get really nerdy about this. First of all, from a movie making point of view, he wasn't there. That wasn't Matt Damon. That wasn't Mark Watney looking there. It was so blatantly, he just kind of flopped onto the floor and was like, ugh. And then for no reason, they just cut away to like a really tight thing on his arm. And then he lifts up a flap, and underneath the flap is the watch face. And I'm like, first of all, a watch is really not very handy if every time that you want to look at the watch, you have to lift up a flap. Because the idea was, of course, he hadn't been wearing the watch all the time. Because otherwise it would have been round the outside of his spacesuit all the time, or on his wrist the whole time. Yeah. So they had to just go, how would this work? So obviously after the whole movie was filmed and they're like, we need some money, or someone wants to pay us money to do this thing. And they just retrofitted in. And it was such a close-up shot of this like hand coming over, and he lifts up this flap to show this watch, and then he put it down again.
And then he pushed a button on it.
And he pushed a button on it, and then he put it down again, and then he went on with his world. Okay, so that's from a movie point of view. You could tell this had been shot afterwards, not with Matt Damon. They were just like, okay, get the arm, we'll match the lighting, we'll have some red blurry stuff in the background to show where he is. And they're like, okay, let's do this kind of thing. And he lifts it up and he presses it. Okay, now what's the other thing? What's the scientific, really nerdy reason why this just doesn't work at all? Why this doesn't fly?
With the watch.
Yeah, the analog watch. Why not that watch?
I don't know. Maybe it doesn't work on Mars.
No, think about it. Why do they not call days on Mars days and they call them sols? What's that? We read the book. We know what it is.
Yeah, because the sun...
The spin of Mars isn't 24 hours. It's 24 hours and like 26 minutes or whatever it is.
Maybe that's just this. Like, if you go on travels, you sometimes have your iPad.
It had 12 hours on it. Like, how did they fit in that extra 26 minutes? That's the whole point, is that time, days don't work properly. So he looked at his watch and I was like, is that Earth time or is that a sol time? And if it's a sol time, I mean, okay, in universe, it could work that this is a special watch that when it reaches midnight, it just pauses for 26 minutes, or it goes 26 minutes. But I'm like, that's like, you wouldn't just get an off-the-shelf watch to use that with.
But maybe that is like his thing to know what time it is on Earth.
That's what I'm just saying. But like, why did he look at it at that point? Like, there's no way that he could match up in that. Like,
he was making sure that he's on time to catch his vehicle.
The whole point of a watch is that you can lift your arm up and see the time. And his watch was something that you couldn't lift up to see the time.
Well, you have to protect it from the Martian sand.
Okay, so again, if this is a watch advert, what is the thing that you want to say about this? Like, the Speedmaster is the watch that they used on the moon, actually flew to the moon. Okay, so you're like, okay, that's good. They actually use this on the moon, not like on the outside of this, on the other space. But if this is an advert for this watch and how great this watch is, it should be open to the elements and not be under a protective flap. Being under protective flap is really not a good advert for your watch. Your advert for the watch is like, no, this could survive on Mars without a protective flap over it. Anyway, so that's a stupid rant about that kind of stuff. But it was so blatant, like, and now for the product placement. You know, James Bond does this all the time. You know, what kind of watch do you have? Yeah. Oh, is it a Rolex?
It's an
Amiga or whatever it is. Mm. Yeah. So I don't mind product placement. But that, as it happened, I was just looking at it going, this makes no sense. And as I was doing it, I was like, this makes no sense from every point of view. Narratively, movie-making-wise, scientifically, chronologically. Like, what is the function of the watch? And I was just looking and going, but you wouldn't, like, who's going to make a mechanical watch which is good on Mars? Because only 6 people are ever going to use it. Like, it's only good for 6 people in the whole world. Not even in the whole world. On Mars, 6... Well, actually, no, that was the third mission. So that was... There'd already been 18 people on Mars. Yeah. So 18 people are going to use this watch. And you're like, okay, it's a limited edition. A very, very limited edition. But
in that moment, I also... It was kind of like a like a stumble. If you if you walk across the road and then there's a little stone in the way and you kind of look down and you see it and you're noticing it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a great effect, but you notice.
Block. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was looking at it. Why was that now? What was this?
And the thing is, this is the kind of thing that now, after watching the movie, I'm actually going to look and read more about the movie because I don't like doing that before. Now I'm going to probably find loads of other people who've had exactly the same complaint. It's like, what? How do the hours work? So actually, I don't know. Maybe I can't be the only person to notice this, but it really stood out to me.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Another thing that I thought was interesting was about like talking from a science kind of thing and a product placement. Even when I was reading the book, I was like, this is a book which presumes that SpaceX doesn't exist. You know, because it was set kind of so many years in the future or something. Yeah. Like, it was never quite clear, but it's like, we need an extra rocket. Okay, let's build the rocket. And NASA was like, yeah, let's build the rocket. And then they're like, we don't have one. It's like, well, the Chinese have one. I'm like, just call up Elon Musk. You know, and this was one of my thoughts of the book. I understand that's not what the book is about. But even in this movie, I was thinking, well, how could they have got SpaceX in? And I was like, no, they wouldn't have done this because the only way they could have done it is like, we've got this probe and we've got to send it up. You know, the first one that NASA sends
up.
But it explodes, it breaks up.
Yes.
And I would understand that if I was Elon Musk and they said, hey, we want to use you and we've got these different spaces in the story that we can use you. Who do you like? And your rocket's going to fail. And they'd be like, no, thank you. No.
Yeah. But like, actually, at that point, I was thinking about the last mission they had where they had all the stuff that they wanted to blow up, stuff for the ISS.
Yeah.
Which then...
Oh, you mean the last SpaceX? I thought you were talking about the one in the movie. No,
the last SpaceX mission.
Yeah, that it looked really similar to what happened on the movie.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I totally had the same feeling about that mission there.
Yeah. So I thought it was fine. I mean, that's not a criticism because it's in a fantasy world where NASA has got enough funding for five different missions to Mars.
Did you also see that it called different?
What? NASA?
The Space Center?
Yeah, it's the Johnson Space Center in Houston. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's a place.
Is that a place?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they came up with it. I never heard of that. I thought they replaced the name for some reason.
No, I think it's the Johnson Space.
Oh, there's several. I didn't know that. I only know one.
No, there's the Kennedy Space Center, and then there's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, you know, where they build it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let's just type it in here. Johnson Space Center. Yeah, it's the NASA's primary center for design, development, and testing of spacecraft and associated systems for human flight.
So it's more like office... like thinking stuff, not so much
the Lyndon B. Johnson Space Center.
All right. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that this existed.
That is a place.
Okay. That's fun.
So there it is. We saw it. Like that's
But this is it also a place where rockets start?
Well, it's where it's like the control center and things like that.
Oh, okay.
So where is it? In Houston, Texas. Yeah, Houston. You know when they say in Apollo 13, Houston, we have a bomb.
Yeah.
That's it. That's where they're going to.
All right.
Know?
Okay.
So it is a thing.
And the Kennedy Space Center is where
the
Florida.
Rockets take off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And the Jet Propulsion Laboratory is where they do the nerdy building of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's a JPL. You know, once an SF, when I was in San Francisco, I said, hey, has anyone got anything cool for me to do in San Francisco? And some SFBRP listener was like, yeah, come to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory or one of those, you know, NASA places there. But then I was foreign, so I couldn't do it. I'd need security clearance and stuff. It wouldn't have worked.
Aww.
So I couldn't do that. So talking about places that I've been to, guess where I was on Sunday?
On Mars.
I was on Mars. Now, this movie was filmed in studios, I think, in Hungary or something. What did it say here? Let's look at the Wikipedia page. Budapest in Hungary was selected for filming. But then it says here, a practical backdrop for Mars was filmed in Wadi Rum, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site located in Jordan. Wadi Rum has been used as the backdrop for other films set on Mars, including Mission to Mars, Red Planet, The Last Days of Mars. Filming lasted approximately 70 days. This is interesting because on Sunday I was in Aqaba in Jordan and I took a trip out to Wadi Rum. Not because this movie was filmed there. It's because last time I was in Aqaba, I went up to see Jordan. Petra in Jordan. And Petra is, you would recognize that as the as one of the filming locations for the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. The desert, the crescent. What is it? The crescent?
The desert cathedral kind of thing.
Anyway, so he goes in there and he has his faith tested and he bows before God and he knows the name of God and picks the right cup. Anyway, that's where that was not filmed because it was probably all the studio, but you know, the iconic entrance where they ride up on the horses and they find the Nazis inside.
Probably have seen that before.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So that's also in Jordan. That's where I went last time I was there. And this time I was like, well, the other place that I really want to see is Wadi Rum. Because
how was it? Was it?
It was fantastic. So I turned up there and I'm like, holy shit, this looks exactly like Mars. Because it's like Mars.
It's red.
It's red. Everything's red. And there's these big rocks that stick up. And there is some like plant life there as well. But then there's lots of dunes where there's just nothing. And so it was pretty cool. Actually, if you look at the artwork for this podcast, you will see on your iPhone screen a video of which is a screen grab of me there. Or maybe a selfie. We haven't decided what image we're going to use yet. Maybe a selfie of me on Mars. Or maybe a picture of me juggling on Mars or whatever's happening there. So it is an absolutely amazing place. And I'm so glad that I saw it just before this. Now, a lot of the exterior shots when it's just a lot of these big sweeping things, I think there's a lot of it's just computer generated, or they've taken a bit of this rock and a bit of that rock and put it all together. But there were quite a few times, especially when it was just a man in a spacesuit or a part of a rover or like a little exterior, and there was some stuff and there were some rocks in the background, I was like, I do recognize that view, I know where that rock was. But it didn't happen that often, because I guess I was only there for 2 hours, driving around for 2 hours in a pickup truck, and they're sitting in the back of this pickup truck with seats. But you know,
that's so pretty good.
It was
fun.
Really good fun, and I went around there. So I did recognize at the start. I was like, oh right, I know that thing. And there was another time when there was this sun setting. I was like, I recognize that rock outcropping and I'd looked through some of the photos and videos.
How big is that area?
It's a fucking desert. It's massive. Like, it's just really open.
You but, like, is that the rock that, like, is there a certain area of the desert where there are rocks?
Yeah, there's the Wadi Rum is the dramatic part.
Oh, right. Okay.
And they were using a lot of the dramatic parts in the movie. Of course they are, because
obviously
it's dramatic.
It's Mars.
That's no problem. It was really good looking. And I'm glad it was this way around, because I think if I'd have seen the movie first and then gone there, I'd have been thinking more about the movie. And there I could just go in. It was all fresh in my mind and everything was amazing. And I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. I mean, I'd seen photos before, but photos don't really do it justice. Whereas I think this movie really does do Mars justice. I mean, it looks a little bit too much like Earth in some ways, but also I'm totally fine with that. Like, I saw some of those rock formations, I was like, yeah, that rock formation, I know that's a rock formation that was caused by water, because I have been there and I walked up that little canyon, that little bit wriggly bit there, I know. And
but
stuff.
We know that on Mars there's water.
Yeah, but like it's,
and it was carving things from what I've seen, the planet.
Yeah,
wasn't
from
it?
What? Yeah, there is running water and stuff like that, but it's a lot more wind erosion and other stuff erosion. So I'm not saying there's no water on Mars. I'm just saying that like some of it looked a bit fresh. Like in the movie, it was a little bit too fresh. And I was like, I want it to be a bit more worn down. Like
one other thing I wanted to talk to you about was you mentioned to me, I don't know, yesterday or something, that you looked on Twitter and there were people tweeting about the Martian thinking this is... a true story based on true things.
Let's just go to google.com. Now, there's some really fun things with Google Autocomplete. I'll just show you one or two things here. So type in list. Is Deckard... Look at that. Is Deckard a replicant? Is Deckard a replicant in the book? Is Deckard an android? Is Deckard a replicant Reddit? You know, so it's one of those kind of things. So so if you type in, is the Martian... Is the Martian a sequel to Interstellar? Is the Martian a sequel? Is the Martian based on a true story? Is the Martian a remake? So there's those two things. Like, is it a sequel to Interstellar? Yeah. So I'm just saying that is the Martian based on a true story? Let's just type this in. Some people think the Martian is based on a true story. So it does happen. But we had this conversation the other day. Like, I know people who are like, when people said, oh, it's been 100 years since the Titanic sank, and they were all like, what? Because I think we said that it sank in 1912, and then in 2012 we were saying it's been, and they were like, what? I just know it as a Leonardo DiCaprio movie from the 1990s, and it's like, yes, it is that. But so here's something from time.com. Sitting in the theater watching The Martian, some girl behind me asks if it's a true story. Is this based off a true story? My sister, about The Martian. As great as The Martian was, my favorite part was after, when my grandma asked if it was based on a true story. Generally bothered, but my mum thought... See, it's everyone saying that somebody else... It's not the people on Twitter who thought...
Of course. It's always the friend of a friend.
Yeah. Kaylin tweeted that I thought The Martian was based on a true story, and now it's ended up on BuzzFeed. I'm never showing my face again.
Aww.
So, yes, it is. It is a thing.
Look, people, nobody, no person, no human has ever been on Mars.
Yes, but this is a thing. Like, and I was explaining the math to you, is like a lot of people, they watch Apollo 13. I was going to say Apollo 14. Apollo 13, and they're watching it, and like they don't know how it ends. And of course, they don't know how it ends because it happened 30 years before they were born. Well, no, that happened in like not 1970 or something like that. No, say people landed on the moon in 1969. The last people to go to the moon was 1972.
Yes.
So that was 8 years before I was born, was the last people onto the moon. Yeah. 11 years when the first people on the moon. And so that's like 12 to 16 years or whatever. No, I'm getting it mixed up in my brain now.
It was before I was born.
Okay, so the people on the moon 15 years before you were born.
Yeah.
If you were born in 1995, which now you're 20 years old, so you're a fully functioning adult.
Yes.
People were walking on the moon 25 years before you were born. In other words, longer than you've been alive before you were born, people walk in. So it's like a whole generation of people before you. So like, so if people were walking on the moon, people walking on the moon happened longer ago before you were born than you've been alive. Yes. Like, why wouldn't you also think that people have walked on Mars and also they don't anymore? Like, people walked on the moon. Oh, nobody's been back there for a long time. People could have gone to Mars and not been back there, and we just didn't know about it.
Like, yeah, but the thing with the moon is that there is existing, I wouldn't say footage, but there is existing footage and photos. And even if people say they might be fake, I don't get into that one. But now, if there would have been people on Mars, that would have been a great thing, like a big thing. You would have known.
I'm not saying
you can't miss that.
I know. What I'm saying is that I understand how someone could be confused about it, considering how many things are featured in movies as true stories. And it's only when you get to the end of the movie, it says based on a true story. And you're like, oh, really? You know, like that kind of thing. I'm just saying there's lots of movies where people aren't sure if it's a true story or not a true story, based on a true story, inspired by real events. There's a big thing that goes on here. And I think it's totally fine that people might think that The Martian is based on a true story. Also, maybe they've not seen it. I mean, quite a few of these people on Twitter, it was at the end of the movie. It was like, oh, is that based on a true story? Mm. But I could totally understand why people would look at that and go, oh, that looks pretty confusing.
It is quite
convincing.
Close to reality. Like, if you, as a person, the thing is with, like, the technology used there, there's no, like, technology that we don't have currently.
No, it's like gravity. You know, gravity is a disaster movie because it's current thing. It's a spaceship that doesn't exist and a space station that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And something goes wrong and it falls down in the same way that the Poseidon Adventure. This is another one. Like, is the Poseidon Adventure, is that based on a true story? It's a ship. It's a cruise ship that turns over. Well, we've got lots of cruise ships. Has any of them turned over and people had to climb up a Christmas tree to get out? Maybe Towering Inferno, not a real building that burnt down, but it was a building
inspired
by real events. So gravity, you go, well, gravity.
Well, it actually
there is a space shuttle.
There is that debris in
there
around
is debris
in orbit.
In space. It is
a threat to the ISS.
Yes, a Chinese space station and the Hubble telescope being functional, probably not going to be happening at the same time. But that was an interesting movie because I don't think of gravity. It's a good action movie, an adventure. It's a great disaster movie, but I don't see it as a science fiction movie, even though it's set in space.
Yes.
Whereas I do think The Martian is more of a science fiction movie because it's not a disaster movie.
Well, the thing it is still fiction.
It is science fiction, yeah.
But if
gravity,
like,
isn't science fiction, it's just fiction.
No, it's just fiction, but if we would be able, like, just put it 20 years forward or whatever, mm-hmm. and people would actually be able to go on Mars,
yeah.
But then that wouldn't be science fiction anymore. Then that would just be fiction.
Yeah, well, right? I'm not... No, now it's science fiction because people haven't been to Mars.
Exactly.
And nothing has gone wrong because they haven't been there.
Yeah.
I think gravity isn't science fiction because it's just... It's not a real spaceship.
Yeah, but
it is just
no question about gravity.
Well,
but if
I'm
gravity,
not totally convinced it's not science fiction. I'm just saying this is an argument that could be made.
I think I'm totally with you on the side that gravity is just fiction.
Yeah.
But just imagine gravity would have been apart from the abilities of filmmaking that wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago, if they would have filmed that movie 20 years ago, that then would have been at that point maybe science fiction, because it wasn't possible at that point.
No, 20 years ago, and all of the stuff in space was...
Yeah, don't take the 20 years so fix. But if I'm saying in 20 years or 30 years or whatever, actually people, NASA or whoever, will send people to Mars, then the Martian...
Isn't
science fiction anymore.
Well, it is science fiction because it was made now. You know, that's the thing. But it was weird. I do remember seeing this, I can't remember which Bond movie it is, and he gets up and he's going, ooh, and he gets up and there's a coffee making machine, and a machine makes him coffee, and it's like, wow, this is great. And this is like a, you know, Q has designed this thing. It's really science fictional. I mean, it's a real thing, but it's like, so, I mean, that was the new, like, oh, this is the product placement, a coffee making machine. And now you look at it and go, wow, back in the 1970s, 60s, a coffee making machine, like an espresso machine or whatever, like an automated. That was a real, that was like big, that was cutting edge technology, and now it looks so quaint. And I, maybe that's going to happen in the same way.
It's the same with people in certain movies having a mobile phone.
Yeah. That's suddenly,
wow,
that's
that
really,
was science fiction.
Yeah, science fiction-y. Okay, a few more things that I just want to say. The 3D, this was filmed with 3D cameras, like dual cameras.
Yeah.
Probably the best 3D of any movie that I've seen. Not... first of all, it wasn't retrofit, and also it wasn't gimmicky. It was always there. It was always in 3D, but it always felt really natural.
Yeah, it wasn't like the feature wasn't like, oh, this movie is in 3D.
Yeah.
Look, this is 3D. Look
but,
here.
But even then, like say Mad Max was filmed in 2D and then retrofitted into 3D, and that was really, that kind of got to me a bit. Because I can tell the retrofitting of it and stuff.
Okay.
But then other movies like Avatar and even the Lord of the Rings, no, not the Lord of the Hobbit movies and stuff, they were shot in 3D.
Yeah.
But it felt like it was a feature. It's like, oh no, we're doing it 48 frames a second, high definition 3D and massive surroundy sound. This just felt like someone who was really good at making movies, Ridley Scott. It's really good movie maker. Let's forget Prometheus. Generally, pretty good movie maker. He's, you know, he's,
it was
done,
an
he's done lots of good things. You know, Alien, Blade Runner, even Gladiator, you know, some good, like, classic movies that you think, yes, this is a movie which is good, it's dramatic, it's good. And Prometheus was just so bad. And now this, I'm like, oh, this is actually good again. It's like, oh, he can actually make good science fiction movies.
Yeah, it was more like, this is a movie about, like, a guy, and it's in space and stuff.
Yeah.
And it happens to be in 3D.
Yeah, it just, that was the thing. It happened to be, and it worked. The landscapes worked really well. The space stuff worked really well. And also just people sitting around, you know, in NASA.
It was quite,
it was just like, oh, it's really
pleasant.
Nice to just see 3D stuff which isn't retrofitted and isn't like, it isn't being forced into my face,
like,
all the time.
I would say, like, the opposite to that 3D-ness would be like Life of Pi, where they really, like, played out that the
fish
beauty,
are jumping out the screen
and stuff. Yeah. This doesn't happen in that movie. Yeah. It's just multiple layers of dimension.
But no, it's not layers. It's actually 3D. It's not like in when you see a movie which has been retrofitted, which it looks like a bit of cardboard here and a little bit of cardboard behind it, and like lots of flat things going back.
Yeah.
It actually felt like, wow, there's real depth. And we were talking about the Wadi Rum desert, and you're like, those mountains in the back. I was like, yeah, they don't exist. They're like the massive Olympus Mons, kind of like going way beyond the.
Yeah,
the
they're
thing.
Quite in the background, and you quite can see that.
Yeah.
It's just added afterwards.
Yeah. So like I say, a lot of the landscapes were bits and pieces kind of added together. But there were some, like I say, when it was just Matt Damon walking around in the foreground and there was scenery behind, and you can really tell he was in a desert. Those were the only times where I really recognized it. I think a lot of the rest of the times was, I mean, it couldn't be that difficult to go, oh, we need a completely fake landscape. They have, like, all of the elevations of Mars, you know, they know what it looks like.
Yes.
It's probably not too easy, not too difficult to just make a landscape, but to make a landscape and fit a person into it convincingly, it's easier just to
actually just
have
go
a,
to
have
Mars.
A camera, yeah.
The only thing that I think was a bit, but maybe because I know now that it was filmed in Wadi Rum and I looked at the pictures a bit, is, you know, when they had the shots from above and you could see the meteoroid craters.
They were fake.
They look quite fake.
Yeah. And also there was one shot from above and I was like, that patterning is actually vegetation. And I know it because I was just there a few days ago and I know kind of like how the bushes are and kind of what the pattern of bushes are across there.
So,
and it was driving across. I was like, why are you showing all the plants? But again, even if I'd watched it like in next year, I would have forgotten, you know, I wouldn't have remembered that. But I was actually, when I was in Wadi Rum, I was like, oh, there's a lot of plants around here. But I guess they can just digitally take them out. And I guess they did. except for like this one shot where it was totally from above, so you couldn't see what was making that pattern, but that pattern were plants. No, yeah, you didn't notice it.
I didn't see it. Anyway, I really hope that we just didn't just by accident nerded out all the people who want to watch that.
I think people will enjoy this. We haven't done much spot. People have read the book or seen the movie.
Yeah. No, but I think I would recommend to people who liked, maybe read it, maybe didn't. I think it's a good movie.
Yeah, I think for people who read the book and didn't enjoy it or weren't getting into it, I think the movie I was talking before when I did the review of Jurassic Park. You didn't hear it because I recorded it when I was away, and I said actually the movie is the canonical version. That is the version.
Yes.
It's better in every way than the book. And other things, it's sort of like, oh no, the book is definitely the canonical version because it is like that. And there's other ones where it's a bit weird, you know, like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You're like, oh, people say, oh, the book is... And it's like, but it was a radio play before it was a book. And you're like, so which is it? But even though it was originally a radio play, the book came afterwards, but actually now the book is the canonical version. And then when there's a movie or a TV show, people go, ah, oh, it's different from the book, even though it's the same guy writing them all the thing. Whereas this, there's no doubt about it. The book is still the canonical version.
Yes.
But, like, if you said to anyone, let's make a movie of a book, this is really good. I mean, as an adaptation of a book go, this
very
is
much.
Really good because it doesn't hold too close to the book. It understands what is okay. And it was the screenplay was by Drew Goddard, and I recognize that name from the other movies he's done. He did Cloverfield and World War Z and Cabin in the Woods. He was also a director of that one. And The Martian, so he's only done four movies. World War Z, pretty good. Or Zed. Cabin in the Woods, very good. Cloverfield, very good. You know, he knows what he's doing. Also, Daredevil, we really enjoyed that. He wrote and produced the first two episodes of Daredevil, and that we were a big fan of Daredevil.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with that. So he's obviously got hold of this book, and he understood what made the book the book.
Yeah.
And he understood what made the characters
He didn't try too hard to make a movie out of the book. He took the story and tried to keep as close to the book as possible, but with a movie. And you can't, as I said in the beginning, this book is not really, you can't do a movie out of it unless you do a video game. And so I think
yeah, like a choose your own adventure in this situation, a puzzle game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it is a very, very good job done in that one.
Yeah. It didn't feel like the book. What I liked about the book is like, here's a problem.
Yes.
And now how is he going to solve it? And you were like, oh, I reckon you could solve it in this way. Oh, I reckon he could solve it in this way. I reckon he could solve it in this way.
Yeah.
And there was none of that in the movie. It was like,
no,
he knows what he's doing. And people back in NASA have to kind of guess what he's doing at some times. You know, it's like when he goes off to find the probe and you're like, oh, that's actually... And there was a really nice reveal where they go and they do lots of nice parallel stuff of like, he's doing this thing on Mars and back on Earth. And even at the end where they're like, oh, like, can we help him? He's like, no, they're 12 light minutes away. So we're watching this and it looks like it's live, but it's actually 12 minutes behind. But of course, when they save him at the end of it, it was like, hey, they don't wait 12 minutes of screen time to show it. That would have been a bit weird, but they kind of explained, actually, this is all happening 12 minutes later, but don't worry, let's just go with the drama. And they do, and it's fine.
I would really say it is kind of like soft science for popular cinema.
I wouldn't say it's soft science. I'd say it's accessible, acceptable. Yeah. Like, it's acceptable science for everyone, and it's accessible for most people, except for nerds like me who are like, how does that watch count that last 20 few minutes of the day, which isn't... anyway.
Well, that kind of wasn't explained in the movie, really, that the soul is something different than an Earth day. It wasn't really explained.
No, but they said, oh, Earth, they were saying Martian days. And actually, when they first said souls, that's never explained. I understand it, but I was like, do people understand that a soul is a Martian day?
No, I don't think...
I was saying, because that was the only number that they ever counted, and every time it came up on the screen, there was like this bloop as it came up on the screen. I was like, it's like a subtitle comes up, and the subtitle has a sound effect. Bloop, this many souls left. And you're like, and that was the one number they were pounding home, so that's very different from the book. Anyway, that's it. I don't rate the movies. I don't think we did. Let's have a look. Did we, when we did Interstellar, did we actually give it a... where was it? Interstellar. Yeah, we didn't give it a rating, so we don't have to rate this because we only rate books.
Good. Yeah.
That's good. I would rate it good. I would rate it decent movie. Not the best movie I've seen this year, but a good movie, a really good movie that I've seen this year.
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah, some issues with it, but not really from... Nothing I can really criticize it for, because everything that was happening, I was like, yeah, I understand. Like, for movie making, yeah, they've got to make these choices.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is fine. Yeah, good. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to bed.
Yeah, because it's... I thought, oh, we'll talk about this film for a little while. How long was Interstellar? Yeah, we talked about this movie for over 10 minutes longer than we talked about Interstellar. Yeah, whatever. Let's do this. What's the next book that we're going to review? I guess we'll get
maybe
to Aurora.
We'll get to Aurora.
I finished the first 15 Lives of Harry August, so I'll get to that in the next few days. But this will be like there'll be like 5 podcasts recorded and over the span of 7 days or something. So I don't mind if I wait a little bit. And so yeah, we'll get to that. You can become my friend on Goodreads, and Juliana, you can check us out there. And like other people, you can post on the SFBRP listener group. Someone posted there about my review of Jurassic Park and Michael Crichton, so you can join in with that conversation if you want. It's only 3 messages long or something at the moment, so whatever. So you can check that out there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge there, and Juliana is also on Twitter. You can find her JUKU Berlin, Juliana Kunzendorf Berlin.
Right, but I'm not very active Twitter
not
user.
Not really at all. And you can email me. I'm luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email that I get. If you've got a book that you want me to read, if you're the publisher or promoter or author, don't even bother. If you've got a book that you want me to review and you're just a reader or a listener and you just want me to check it out and you want to hear what I have to say about it, you can send me an email too. Or on the Goodreads listener group. SFBRP listener group. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.